Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. I'm Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO at BrightPath.
I'm Bray Wheeler, Consultant at BrightPath.
One thing that we've talked about, at least in a couple of previous episodes, is this really common call or email that we get from prospective clients. And it usually starts with, I don't have any kind of crisis plan or structure, but my executives have told me I need an active shooter plan.
Yep.
And we always immediately steer them towards, you might need an active shooter plan. But if you don't have anything else, what you first need to establish is like a crisis management framework. You need a plan on how you're going to deal with any major disruption that establishes, here's the team, here's the process, here's how you're going to communicate, here's how you're going to make decisions, here's how you're going to escalate things. When we talk about a crisis framework, that's what we're talking about. So we've talked about this several times. What we want to talk about today is what happens when you have that in place, and now it's time to take a look around the company and say, there's probably some specific things I need to write a plan for. But what are those things? So what do we do next?
There's a lot of different, and I think people can get hung up on evaluating different things and scoring different things and talking to different people. All of those things are important and all of it needs to come into play, but you really just need to start somewhere and some obvious places that you can start to have those conversations to kind of whittle yourself in are, do we have something recent that we were not prepared for that did not go well? Say you're a bank or financial institution, we had an armed robbery. We didn't have anything in place. Probably need a plan for that. You know, something that can help guide us through that kind of situation. That's kind of an obvious starting point, but it's also looking at what are your top enterprise risks and start the conversation there. What have other functions of the company done any kind of impact or likelihood analysis that you can borrow from? I mean, you can get way down a rabbit hole on a lot of that.
You can totally turn this into rocket science. And I think that's a bad route to go, right? You can do all this analysis of frequency, impact,
vulnerability.
You could spend months making heat maps of your risks.
That's not helpful.
It's not helpful. I mean, like I remember a project once internal to an organization many years ago where a division came to our crisis team and said, we wanted this detailed threat analysis of our organization so that we could plan around the biggest risks to the organization. And we all looked at them and said, the number one phone call that we get from your division is the power is out. Can we start by having a process to deal with when the power is out? And they said, no, that can't be the answer. It's got to be much more complicated than that. They spent weeks doing an analysis and they came back and said, hey, our top risk is the fact the power goes out and we don't have generators at these particular facilities.
Yep.
So you can turn this into rocket science.
Right.
Don't do that.
No.
I think Bray's got it right. What are the obvious things that you need to plan for? Or what are the things that are driven by regulatory requirements that you have to do?
Right.
Start there. I mean, for example, if you're a financial institution, I mean, you mentioned armed robbery, but let's go to a regulatorily driven issue. If you're a financial institution that's subject to the FDIC's and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency's audit process, then the FFIEC guidelines say 14 years after H1N1 that you, oh, I'm sorry, 9 years after H1N1, you have to have a pandemic plan. So one of your scenarios that you need to plan for is you need to have a pandemic scenario because from a regulatory standpoint, you're required to have it. So that's an obvious one. Start there because you have to have it.
Well, exactly. There's a lot of work being done, whether it's large or small organization, and no matter the type of organization, there's a lot of work that's already done that's people have prioritized these things, business initiatives, common things that, you know, call centers get called about or security is getting called about, regulated information that says you need to have these different things. Those are all easy places to start. And you just kind of flop them on the table and say, okay, what are the ones that, you know, for sure we have to have? Let's start there. And then as you tick through or other things bubble up, then you start to address them. I mean, if you have an office, say you're a mid-sized company, you have an office in the Midwest and you have one smaller branch in Florida, probably don't need a hurricane plan. You just need a plan to kind of give shelter to that office, a close-up plan, something for those employees. You don't need a full-fledged organizational plan if you don't have anything that's critical down in Florida. If most of your organization is in Minnesota, hurricane plan probably isn't the place to start.
Right. I mean, we like to tell people, we want to look at the obvious risks first. Right. The things that you know are going to happen to you, the things that are you're regulatorily required to have planning around. And then I think you can start to get into the outer rings of, well, I've covered the things I know are going to happen. I've covered the things I have to have for regulatory purposes. Here are some things that I think are the next circle of risks here. And I think you can kind of keep going in kind of circles from there as you need to have scenario-specific plans.
Well, and I think even as you start to build those things out and you're a couple years in and you have a dozen, let's say you're really doing a really good job and you have like 24 plans of different scenarios, it's important to go back to those plans you've already created and reassess. Or, hey, we've moved in a different direction as a company. This risk that the company is talking about generally is becoming a bigger deal. Hey, we did a plan for that 2 years ago. Let's pull that back out and make sure it aligns to what it is that we're talking about or the direction that we're going. I just think that it's, to kind of beat on the point that we're making, it's real, real easy to go down a rabbit hole, and it's a real, real easy to make even these plans more complicated than they need to be. We've seen a lot of different organizations try to account for every little nuance of a situation. That's probably not helpful. Nobody's pulling that plan. You get into that situation, nobody's pulling that plan out to address it. Really what you're trying to accomplish with these top risks, these kind of more specific plans or annexes or whatever you want to call them on top of your crisis plan to address a situation is, what are those key unique things in that situation that we need to make sure that we hit right away, or that we need to activate right away, or we need to make decisions on right away? And then what are those other nuances that we need to start accounting for as we kind of move through the situation? It's not another 14 pages on how to do something. That's not helpful.
Well, and we could think about, I mean, we could probably do a whole episode just about how to construct plans in an intelligent and effective manner. You know, the couple things that you brought up that I think are worth elaborating on here is, when we are talking about developing these scenario specific plans, these are should really be structured as annexes to your crisis management plan or crisis management framework, whatever you're calling it. Because essentially what you're saying is, I'm going to take the framework by which I always manage a crisis. I'm going to add this plan content for this specific scenario or situation or type of scenario. I'm going to use that on top of my framework. It might have, maybe you've got specific checklists by role. Maybe you've got some specific assessment questions. You've got some specific strategies you're going to follow. But all of that has to be built. That annex has to be constructed in a flexible way. Because to your point, you can overstructure this where it's too rigid and you find yourself in the situation where the real life scenario is slightly off of how you thought it was going to be, and now your annex is shit because the underlying scenario is different, or you didn't foresee the combination of factors that got you into the place that you're in,
or you've positioned it in a way that the people that are responsible for working through those checklists or kind of working through the process or helping facilitate that conversation get stuck up on what order they're supposed to be doing things in, and, oh, we didn't call this person or this thing didn't get done, we can't possibly move on to the next thing. That you have to keep adapting and you have to keep moving against whatever the situation is. Those plans should really be there to guide you and make sure that you're accounting for the kind of the nuances of those situations.
Part of what I think you have to account for as well in all of this is that you may have developed plans for a number of different scenarios, plan annexes for a number of different scenarios. Your situation that you find yourself in now is a combination of scenarios, right? Yep. So you're pulling two or three plan annexes out that you got to execute. How do you make that interact? And did you plan it in that way? And do you even know the situational question, which is, do you know that there's really three things going on?
Right.
You may only see two of them at the time. You may not have the awareness to know that the third. So anyway, the point is that the annex need to be able to interoperate. And part of what you want to think about when we started getting into this complex crisis management situation is, what do you do when you have the multiple simultaneous incidents, or you have the incident, the crisis situation that has multiple impacts that fit your scenario? Like, you've had a cyber attack and you're under cyber attack, and now you have a physical attack in your lobby. Okay, those are two. It's the same, might be the same crisis, you don't know it yet, but now you've got simultaneous issues going on that you've got to deal with.
So as you're working through and trying to identify, because I think that's an important point when you're thinking about what risk to prepare for, what's your top risk, it really is going back through the annexes that you have and or thinking about, okay, our top risk is a data breach. Great, okay, so let's start there. It's important to have that exercise too, kind of once you're done, a little bit of an after action or a little bit of a kind of debrief off of it, going, okay, what are those other things, to your point, that might manifest out of this or may have caused this? Is it a physical security thing? Does that need to be the next thing, you know, that we go into a little bit more detail on? The one I always enjoyed at kind of our previous life, was the having an annex for a terrorist attack and an annex for a mass casualty event. Does it really matter as that organization, the nature of the situation? Is really what you're doing is managing a mass casualty attack, and later on it turns into something else. And that's, so as you're thinking about those top risks, it's important to be clear about what it is that you're trying to address, because as in that case, that organization, there's no responsibility there from a terrorist standpoint. Really, you're treating it as a mass casualty event. You don't really care what the motivation of the attacker is at that point. So it's being really clear as you're laying out what that annex is, what that top risk is, that you're dialing into the right thing that's going to have the impact to your organization that you're accounting for, and not something that's sexy or kind of high profile or gives it a different kind of cool spin on something. It's really getting down to the nuts and bolts of what that situation is.
Yeah, I think you make an important point. This can be overdone. Yep. I mean, and we've seen this. We have often seen plan annexes that we're being asked to edit coming in as a consultant. And I think we read a 170-page one back at the first of the year on a, to be fair, it was on a complex topic, and I don't want to minimize that the underlying issue was a serious one, but it was about three times as long as it really needed to be.
Right.
You just can't, you've got to allow flexibility in these plans. You have to make sure they connect to the underlying incident or crisis management process, and they need to be able to interoperate with other annexes when you have these kind of multi-impact complex crisis situations that we hope you never have to face. But the reality is, if you're in a big company, big organization, sooner or later you're going to run into that scenario. And so you want to make sure that your annexes and your plans kind of all fit what those unseen possibilities are, because we know it'll be the thing, it'll be the combination of events that you never imagined would happen.
Right.
The whole time we've been sitting here in this podcast talking, thinking about these multi-impact events, I just keep going back to Japan and the 2011 earthquake off the coast of Nitori Province. And that was, you know, one of the largest earthquakes in world history, followed by this massive tsunami and then this rising nuclear issue at Fukushima that came after. And it all interconnected. And the Japanese government just didn't have situational awareness to see the big picture, and struggled in the response. That should have been much easier for a company, or for a country rather, that was that prepared.
Well, yeah, because individually they could execute each one of those situations probably brilliantly.
But not all three at the same time.
Right. There wasn't that
right.
That awareness.
So as you think about how to plan for your top risks, as you build that crisis framework and you're moving forward, our advice, go for the obvious and regulatorily driven risks and then start to look out from there. And whatever you do, don't turn this into rocket science.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Keep your planning simple. Make your annexes interoperate. We wish you luck. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back with you with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.